Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
The criminal is the one, is the guy in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
All you're doing is you're prosecuting these people or investigating these people because that guy with the orange makeup and the screwy hair and the coke button is a fucking criminal.
That's a legal term. It's from the Latin.
From the Latin of ficium?
Ficium, ficium imminal cre.
Yeah.
Fucking fe imminal cre.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to George Conway Explains It All to Sarah Longwell. I'm not Sarah Longwell. I'm her best friend, Jonathan Last of the Bulwark, and I'm joined by the great and powerful George Conway.
I don't feel powerful.
Yeah, well, you know who else doesn't feel powerful?
Things have not been going the way I have decreed them.
At least you're not Christopher Ray.
I guess.
So that's where I want to start out today. Yesterday, word was handed down that Christopher Wray, who Trump never said he would fire, Trump merely danced around it and said, I am going to nominate Kash Patel to run the FBI, and you can make of that what you will.
He's not very subtle.
Not super subtle. And Christopher Wray announced that he's, you know, for the good of the institution, he's going to step aside, even though he has 3 years left on his 10-year term, and that the director of the FBI is supposed to be an apolitical position which spans presidential administrations, so that the law enforcement officers there are fully independent and don't see themselves as actually answering to a president. Is this bad?
It's not good, but I mean, Trump had the power, has the power, or will have the power on January 20th, that new fire, the FBI director in place. So this doesn't change the net result of what was going to happen anyway. But that being said, I wish that Ray had not done this, because it is the perfect example of what Professor Snyder at Yale says we should not do when faced with an authoritarian threat or an authoritarian regime, which is to obey in advance. And this is a
ding, ding, ding example
of obeying in advance. Now, he may have had some reasons to do that. I mean, he is a longstanding Justice Department functionary, and he probably has a very large pension. Now, one speculation that I've heard is that, well, if he were to be fired, then Trump might take the position that he was fired for cause, which would require litigation, which is what poor Andy McCabe had to go through. He was fired for cause, and he had to litigate for a couple of years to demonstrate that there was, in fact, no cause. And that was not a great experience for him. I don't think it's good for the department that he does it this way. I mean, I know that's his Department of Justice and the FBI. I know that that was his stated rationale. But it would have been better, I think, for whatever chance we have of preserving any independence of the Justice Department, functioning independence of the Justice Department, the FBI, for him to have stood his ground and waited to be fired. And then we could all point to, and he himself could point to, that this was not a firing as intended by the people who drafted the statute, that this was simply political, because he is, in fact, he was a Federal Society stalwart and a Republican appointee, right, a Trump appointee. And the only stated reason for Trump's displeasure with him were the investigations of a certain criminal who resided in Mar-a-Lago, who still resides there, is going to move to Washington soon, and who took with him some classified documents and then hid them from the FBI, and the FBI had to get a search warrant, and lo and behold, the documents were exactly where the FBI said they would be. Funny thing. And, kind of like a drug bust. And this is one particular criminal defendant did not like that. And he's now about to become president of the United States. But that may have had something to do with the firing if it were to have occurred on January 21st. But I think
I think making that apparent would be symbolic. I think everybody knows that's what happened. But I think it would be an opportunity to remind people of what exactly is happening here. And it's a shame that we did not have the opportunity to do that. Although we will continue to remind people as is our want.
So our friend David French wrote last night that maybe this is more canny than it looks. So David posits that the Vacancies Reform Act means that because there will be created a vacancy, the president can only temporarily fill that vacancy with somebody who has already received Senate confirmation or who has served in a senior capacity at that agency, meaning that he won't be able to put Kash Patel in on day one.
I don't think you can put Kash Patel in on day one. I haven't gone through the Vacancies Reform Act is kind of complex, and it is convoluted, and it has different impacts on different positions. I was told by a very, very prominent expert in the law, Steve Vladek, last night that there is no water to be held in David's argument, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's...
I think the issue is if you have to have a temporary appointment, that appointment basically does have to come from in the Justice Department, somebody who was already there. And this sort of, I think the last time I remember this happening was, or one of the times it happened was when Trump needed to find a replacement for Sally Yates, who was the holdover acting attorney general from the Obama administration. It was held over because there's somebody had to man the fort while Jeff Sessions was being confirmed. And then she resigned because of the Muslim ban. And then Trump had to find someone within the Justice Department who was suitable. And they found, I think, a Republican appointed United States attorney in Virginia or somewhere. So you'd have to find somebody who's in the Department of Justice who's already there, who you could trust. And I don't know how that specifically applies. The FBI director may be specifically different. There are different provisions for different statutory appointments, but I don't think Kash Patel would be, you could stick him in the FBI directorship on day one. I don't, regardless of whether or not the position was vacant by virtue of a resignation prior to the inauguration or a firing after it. But I could be wrong. I'm just taking the word of Steve Vladek, professor,
sure,
Georgetown, who knows this shit inside and out.
So here's my question. I mean, I look at this and I think that the Timothy Snyder don't obey in advance stuff is absolutely operational.
Yes.
And that it would make a difference to have Trump have to fire.
Yes.
The sitting director of the FBI.
Yes.
Because then he'd have to like send a surrogate out onto the Sunday shows to explain
why. Yes.
And they would have all the explanations would be stupid. And
yes.
You'd get a bazillion columns.
It's like this
would matter, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes. And I think we need, that's one of the things, we have to challenge everything. And we have to do, it's really tough. I mean, you don't want to be screaming that the world is ending every day, because people tune that out. But you do want to be pointing out consistently, this is happening, this is not normal, and this is wrong. And this is a continuing pattern. And tomorrow there'll be something else. And you have to keep that drumbeat up. I mean, that's the lesson of when experts compare what happened in Poland with what happened in Hungary. They say that the Polish opposition did a tremendous job in pointing out everything that the PIS party was doing that was wrong and anti-democratic and authoritarian and autocratic when it was happening. And doing it in a methodical and calm way. And that's what we need to do. And we need to call these people out when they lie. CEG, the wonderful absent Sarah Longwell at that deal book summit. You just have to say it, because the problem is people, you don't have to be rude, but you can't treat it as
impolite to state the basic truth. And that's what Sarri did to the MAGATs on the Deal Book panel, specifically with regard to Kevin McCarthy. And there is no response. All they can do is insult and change the subject. And that's why we have to keep drilling in on this. And sooner or later, the price of eggs will go up again and we'll say, see, was it worth it? So that's my theory.
So I got to ask a dumb question.
There are no dumb questions.
Kash Patel has written a long list of people who are enemies of democracy, who are members of the deep state tyranny, et cetera, et cetera.
I feel left out.
And he has said to Steve Bannon on Steve Bannon's podcast that the people on his written list, what's the word, need to go to prison.
Yes.
Okay. One of the people on this list is Christopher Wray.
Yes.
So I'm just trying to work through this in real time. If the incoming director says that the current director needs to be in prison, Republican senators should be taking action to put the current director in prison then.
Yes, right? You would think they would be conducting an investigation of all the crimes that this person has been said to have committed.
And so it would be a real dereliction of duty by the Republicans in the Senate to not have been attempting to put Christopher Wray in prison yet.
No, well, at least to conduct oversight into these terrible, terrible things that Christopher Wray is alleged to have done, such as to seek a search warrant and obtain a search warrant based upon probable cause against the criminal president, former president of the United States, who stole and secreted and obstructed justice in connection with the stealing of the documents. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, but the corollary to this then is that if the Republicans in the Senate do not believe that Christopher Wray should be in prison and that their actions suggest that they do not believe it because they have not conducted any oversight, then it would seem that they can't confirm Kash Patel because they disagree with this fundamental piece of his judgment. No,
let me say what Commander Spock used to say sometimes to Captain Kirk when he displayed unusual abilities for a human. Your logic is impeccable, Captain Last.
Thank
you,
sir.
Your logic is impeccable. Quite impressive. Impressive display of logic, yes. But humans aren't governed by logic, we are learning.
Yeah.
We are the humans are on a different planet than us Vulcans.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Yeah, we have this crazy tendency, us with the pointy ears, to, you know, examine facts and then reach conclusions based upon those facts and try to look for inconsistencies and so on and so forth. And sometimes we learn of inconsistencies we had not previously learned. We change our views. But the human world, apparently, according to 49.9% of the American public, does not work that way.
Hmm. Yeah. So let me throw something else at you.
Yes, sir.
I mean, let's close our eyes and go to a happy place where we imagine.
Which planet?
We're four planet years. Captain? It's this planet, but we're 4 years ahead of us. So it is currently December of 2028.
Right. And so we're getting in the DeLorean and we're revving it
getting
up.
In the DeLorean, we're going ahead.
Okay. Yay.
And
I'm with you there.
We have an incoming Democratic president.
Only two passengers, right? Just you and me.
Only two. Just us. And that incoming Democratic president can be whoever you would like it to be. You want it to be Mayor Pete? It could be Mayor Pete.
Yeah.
You want it to be whoever. And Kash Patel is the sitting director of the FBI, and he's only 4 years into his 10-year term. Think he's going to resign?
No, I think he would try to be fired, yes.
Interesting. And do you think that an incoming Democratic president would actually fire him?
I think if there were cause.
Would they say, norms? You know, you can't, presidents shouldn't just be firing the director of the FBI because that makes it look political. Do you see what I'm saying? The norms only seem to work one way, George.
The norms do only work one way. But on the other hand, I am reasonably confident that in 4 years, there will be cause for a Democratic president to fire Kash Patel if he does anything remotely resembling what he promises to do in the name of QAnon or whatever thing he is following at the moment.
Yeah, the storm.
Yeah, the storm.
The storm's coming. Just, I mean, between you and me and the lamppost, what do you think his odds are of getting confirmed?
70%? I don't know. I really don't know. I do. I mean, I have heard it suggested, and I'll believe it when I see it, that there are Republican senators, I've heard this from journalists, who quietly are uncomfortable with Patel, not simply because Patel is unqualified and seeks only to wreak vengeance or seek vengeance upon for himself and his boss, but because they themselves fear that if they in any way cross the administration, they could be the subject of criminal investigation as retribution from the boss.
Hmm.
And that, to me, that's, again, that is a burst of logic on part of those Republican senators. But, you know, those bursts are few and far between, and the courage to act on those bursts is even rarer. And as I like to say, you can't go broke betting on the spine, betting against the spinelessness of Republican senators. But we will see. There's also a suggestion that I've heard from some Capitol Hill expert types that there may be some rotating cast of six Republicans or six to eight Republicans who may take turns opposing particular nominees so that three or four of them can cross and vote against particular nominees and defeat more than one of them. I would love to see that. That would be a kind of banding together that we haven't quite seen in the past. And, you know, because there's courage in numbers and then they could spread out the political heat. But I'm not
going to take that to the bank until I actually see it happen. And, you know, I'm skeptical.
My operating theory is that the only way to kill these nominations is before the vote. That if you ask these guys to go on the record and cast votes, it's over.
And that was the key to Matt Gaetz.
Right. Right. That and personal animosity.
Personal animosity. Just, and also, you know, and Trump didn't spend any capital on this guy.
No.
He seems to be willing to spend some capital on Hegseth, which at first it didn't seem that he might be willing to do that. I think he'll spend capital on Kash Patel because that is, you know, the essence of a malignant narcissist is self-gratification and revenge.
Yeah.
And it's the flip side. And this is his central, you know, it's really one of his central purposes in governing is for himself and to seek retribution. And, you know, Patel is a central piece of that. There aren't really going to be too many others who can really fit that bill the way Kash Patel can.
God help us.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Topic number two. We got word this week that Alvin Bragg's office, the Manhattan district attorney, is trying to figure out how to handle the end game of the conviction that they won against the former and soon to be president. And they have three options that they seem to be turning over in their heads. The first is to freeze the case until Trump is out of office. Another is to simply agree that any future sentence won't include jail time. And a third is to close the case, but put a sternly worded notation in the books that there was never sentencing and that the appeal wasn't resolved because of presidential immunity. What are your thoughts on all of this, George?
Well, I think all three of those would functionally work. I think the first one would be subject to challenge, but I think it should work. I don't like the third one. I prefer the first one. I was originally advocating the second one. Well, but let me back up and explain it all. This is uncharted territory for the simple reason that we have never had a criminal convict assume the presidency before. I know that comes as a great shock. It would come as a shock, I think, to the framers. They did not think that we would have such a bad man elected president. In fact, they thought the Electoral College would eliminate the possibility of such bad men who might become governors of states. Hamilton got a lot of things right. Didn't quite get that one right. There is no judicial authority or opinions on this. There are two Justice Department opinions written by the official in-house nerd of the Justice Department, the Office of Legal Counsel. One was written in the Nixon administration, and one was written in the Clinton administration, for obvious reasons, as you will see. And both of those opinions state that it is not constitutionally permissible to prosecute, at least federally, and I'm sure, therefore, state court, I think it follows, a sitting president of the United States, because that would interfere with his duties and obligations and under Article 2 of the Constitution. And if you really did have a president who was a criminal, the first course of action would be to impeach said president and remove him from office,
right?
Which is a nice theoretical possibility. It does not seem to have any practical application here.
Sure. This is like saying, if you have a president who commits an insurrection against the government, don't worry, they can't run again because you have this constitutional amendment which prohibits it.
Right. And also, the Senate of the United States, if it had held a trial immediately after said insurrection, could have not only removed the president for the remainder of his term, which would have been 6 or 7 days, but then barred him permanently from office. And I think also, even though they held the trial 4 weeks later, still could have barred him from office. But someone named Mitch decided that we didn't need to do that. He's just going to go away, which turned out.
Mitch Kupchak? Maybe that was Mitch. Mitch Album? Who can say?
Guy named Mitch. But anyway, to go back to those, I don't think that those OLC opinions, the Office of Legal Counsel opinions, are necessarily correct that you could not prosecute a sitting president. I think absolutely it's the case that you cannot incarcerate a sitting president, because that would not, he would really not be able to hold cabinet meetings in his cell. It just would not work out very well. So I absolutely agree that what's left of this case, to the extent it involves a criminal sentencing to incarceration, would not be permissible after January 20th at noon. So that's why I don't, my original suggestion made on this program with Sarah was, what the judge could do is sentence him to a term of prison. It's not going to in prison in Rikers, say, a year and a half, 2 years, whatever it is. But since that sentence would not be executed prior to January 20th, he would then suspend the sentence and say, okay, well, I'm just going to hit you with these fines, which could be not a few thousand dollars a pop for each count. It's obviously not going to, it's just a few Trump sneakers or watches. Sure. But sure. I think symbolically to have issued the sentence to say this is the sentence that you would have had to serve had you not succeeded in bamboozling the American people, I think that would have been worthwhile. But the district attorney has come up with another proposal, which is stay the proceedings, just freeze them, because that's what happens sometimes. Sometimes people can't make it to court, so you put things off. Well, he can't make it to court for 4 years, or at least until J.D. Vance figures out how to execute a removal of the president under Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, it goes bananas at some point. I think a stay is not a bad idea. Now, that would I think Trump would object to that, and they would try to challenge it, and they would try to argue in the appellate division of a state Supreme Court in New York, and then the Court of Appeals of New York, which is New York's highest court, and then ultimately the Supreme Court of the United States. They would argue that the case has to completely go away. I'm not sure they would win, but, you know, I think it's worth a shot. So that's, I am now the third option that you mentioned, which was the, you know, the notation in the record, you know, I mean, that's fine, but we're getting that anyway, because everybody knows that's what happened.
Right? Yeah. So, I guess.
We don't need to, it's really just stating the obvious anyway. So I would take option one over option two, but I think either one of them would work.
Just the bottom. So I got a couple questions for you. First, I want to back up to the OLC memos. And one of the things I've never understood, and I was around during the Clinton impeachment.
Yes.
I remember all of the talk about, well, the OLC memos.
Yeah, I kind of precipitated the Clinton impeachment.
Yeah. Good job.
Yeah, I nice did. Work. I mean, I'm into that.
Why are the OLC memos treated as holy writ by the legal community? It's not the fucking Constitution.
No, it's not the fucking Constitution. It is a bunch of fucking lawyers speculating on the basis of very little authority about the Constitution. And they are not holy writ, which is why I do not agree with them full stop. I agree with some of what they say. I don't agree with all of what they say. Ultimately, it's going to be up to an Article III court, the Supreme Court of the United States in this sort of circumstance, since there's no other federal court that's going to be involved, to decide. And I think it's an interesting issue. I know everyone says, oh, well, the Supreme Court's in his pocket and so on and so forth. It's like, I'm not sure he's going to win another one. He doesn't win all the time up there. And he frankly didn't win. I mean, he sort of won the immunity case, but the fact of the matter is if he had not won, that case would have gone to trial. And I think he would have been convicted, because all that decision the Supreme Court made, as Sarah and I have previously discussed, would have just knocked out a portion of the evidence supporting the overall charges.
Yeah. I mean, this is one case where I think you're right. The Supreme Court might find against him, because my concern is that the Roberts Court is going to be very reluctant to find against Trump in any issue in which Trump has the ability to defy their order. Right. Because I think Roberts is very worried about an actual showdown with Trump. But in this, like, there is, you know, if, for instance, this wound up going to the Supreme Court and they found against him, the decision was that, like, yes, the DA can freeze the case. Trump can't do anything about that. Like, it just is. And so there's no institutional risk to the Supremes for finding Trump.
I mean, the best way for them to do that is to deny cert. If the Court of Appeals of New York, all the New York courts say, Leah, we're going to just put this on ice. The court could just say, okay, we don't need to deal with this right now, because there's actually nothing happening. And that would be a reasonable ground to deny a writ of certiorari. I mean, Supreme Court likes to decide live issues of importance, and this is like, really, it makes no practical difference to the result. It just means it's just deferring something, which is what they did, frankly, by taking the case, the immunity cases. They put the exhaust.
Right.
So I, you know, it's not. That's. It's quite possible that would be the approach, because it would. It's not for exactly the reasons you say. It's not a bad approach, because it's just like, whatever, we're not getting into this one. And it's one of the things that there's a very famous law professor from Yale named Alexander Bickel, who was kind of like a
Sam Alito's best boy.
And someone who Bob Bork was a fan of. And, you know, he wrote this book called the least dangerous bank, least dangerous branch. And he wrote a considerable part of that book was about how the Supreme Court can avoid contentious issues by simply exercising its ability to avoid deciding issues by not taking cases or by deciding them on grounds other than the important substantive merits of whatever the case presents.
So, which leaves then three other cases. We have the two Jack Smith cases, which are withdrawn. Is that what is the term of art here for the Jack Smith cases?
Dismissed without prejudice, I believe, is what is the terminology, which means that the case is no longer on the docket. It is no longer being prosecuted, but it could be resurrected again if the statute of limitations has not run. For example, if Donald Trump were to decide that he didn't want to take the oath of office, or were he impeached and removed in February of 2025, which will not happen, or if he were removed under Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, which I think could happen, and I like to think that J.D. Vance has a considerable library. He's a Yale Law School graduate, and I think he probably has a considerable amount of research done in that regard, or at least is proceeding to do that. And if he leaves office in any way other than in a box, he could be subject to prosecution.
Explain to me the final report.
The final report, that is an obligatory.
Required by statute, correct?
Required by, well, not by the statute, but by the regulations that were promulgated by Attorney General Reno and that remain in place today for the appointment of special counsel. Special counsels are authorized to investigate the matters that are delegated to them by the Attorney General. And they are charged with the ability to indict people if they find that crimes have been committed within the purview of that jurisdiction. And they are also required to write a report explaining their decisions not to prosecute. And as a result, that's what happened. That's what the famous Starr report was. Although that was under the old Independent Ethics and Government Act version of the Independent Counsel, but it was, the regulations that were written under the Clinton administration provide for a report to the Attorney General, which the Attorney General can then release to the public and to the public. And that's what happened in the Mueller investigation. Although what happened there was a delay while redactions were being made,
right,
during which Attorney General Barr took the opportunity to mislead the public about the conclusions of the report.
Yeah, that was pretty important.
Yeah.
What do you expect from the Jack Smith report? Do you think?
I expect that there will be a report, because I think he's obligated under the regs and obligated to the country and obligated to history to prepare such a report. And I think Merrick Garland is obligated for the sake of the public and for the sake of history to release that report as completely as possible. And I think we're going to see a lot of evidence that we have previously not seen that was obtainable by the Justice Department through its investigative tools at the Department, at the Federal Bureau of Investigation, of the agency that will cease to exist in a short while. That's a joke. Well, maybe not. And also because of the grand jury process, there's going to be a lot of testimony and a lot of statements, and we're going to see a lot of stuff. For example, what was the evidence about? There was a dispute about Cassidy Hutchinson's testimony that she was told by Secret Service agents that Trump had assaulted a Secret Service agent in the vehicle at the Ellipse on January 6th. We're going to hear what people actually had to say about that, probably in the grand jury. We're going to hear some of the testimony that we did. There was testimony that was given in the January 6th congressional hearings by lawyers such as Pat Cipollone, and that testimony was curtailed somewhat artificially, I think, and kind of in certain respects, because Cipollone refused to say exactly what he said to the president and what the president said to him, although you could kind of guess or read between the lines. I don't think that stuff would have worked. I think you would have to give up the ghost in before a grand jury. We're going to see a lot of stuff. It's not going to change the overall complexion of our understanding of what happened that day and in the period of time leading up to it. But I think it will just add just more evidence that I think makes it indisputably clear that he was guilty of multiple crimes in connection with the 2020 post-election process. And then also, we will see more from the Mar-a-Lago investigation. I don't think we need to see much more. We've seen so much about how he directed people to move the documents and try to get people to destroy the videotapes of people moving the documents, and how he had his lawyers lie to the Department of Justice, and how, you know, and the fact that the documents were there. I mean, it's like a drug bust. It's like a drug bust, you know, going into
they a were crack there.
Den, and lo and behold, there's the crack, there's the powdered cocaine, and there's the pot, and all this stuff. It's like, that's, you know, that's what they found there. I mean, he was dead to rights. An interesting thing, though, is that I'm not sure whether the dismissals in the Mar-a-Lago case cover Walt Nauta and the other defendant, whose name escapes me right now. But I don't think that I have a feeling that case isn't going to get prosecuted.
The case was dismissed as against them on bullshit grounds, and is on appeal. And I think that appeal is still proceeding, notwithstanding the dismissal against Trump. But it's going to be interesting to see what the next administration does. I suspect they'll probably withdraw the appeal.
Not based upon any motivation in favor of public interest.
Which leaves then Georgia. And what is the state of play? Just remind me what the state of play is with that case. Have they dropped Trump from that and kept all the other defendants?
I honestly have not followed the Georgia case that closely. I do think what will happen there is, yeah, Trump has to be dropped. You can't prosecute a sitting president, and nobody's going to argue that. And it would just simply delay things. And we'll see if they, you know, can go out there and actually prosecute some of the other defendants.
Pardon them all and shut that down, right?
He can't. No,
because it's state?
State.
Yeah.
The president of the United States only has the authority to grant reprieves and pardons with respect to offenses against the United States.
Has anybody ever tested that at the Supreme Court level?
It's clear, but nobody could contest it. It literally says in the Constitution the president has the power to grant reprieves for offenses against the United States. And I think there is also case law on this.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, but it's a no-brainer.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Last thing.
Yes, sir.
There was a lot of talk in the last week about preemptive pardons, and you've written about that. You talked about that. I think it was Sarah, right? Isn't that where you talked about?
Yeah, we know. Sarah and I went through this, yeah.
What, I mean, how vulnerable are people really? This is, there are tranches, right? I mean, there are people who are really vulnerable.
I was talking to somebody last night, and I will not divulge his name, unfortunately. There's so many people on the list.
Her name is Chiz Laney.
No. It was not Chiz Laney. There was somebody else who'd probably be only known to aficionados of Trump scandalism. But his point was absolutely valid, which was ultimately I'd be found innocent, but not after I'm bankrupted. And that's the problem. And that is the problem, is that if they have anything to play with, a lot of people are not going to be able to absorb the time, the emotional energy, the cost of such an investigation. And that, you know, that's a very, very significant deterrent to people speaking out. And it's not good. I mean, you think of these poor public servants who have, Chris Ray is an example. All right. Chris Ray, you know, he spent, I think he spent some time at a private practice, but I think he spent most of his professional career in the Justice Department. I could be wrong on that, but that's a, you know, that's not a way to accumulate assets with which you can spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in legal fees. And so I do think there is, I am gravely concerned that some of, you know, that there may be some objectively unreasonable investigations that are used to persecute people and that would, you know, really have a deleterious effect on their lives. That being said, I do not like, I'm very uncomfortable with the idea of preemptive pardons.
Sure.
I know that there are different proposals being bandied about. In fact, I was supposed to talk about it with somebody at the Legislative Clock when I had to do this podcast. About, you know, well, we won't name specific individuals. We'll just name categories of people. So, and I think the idea would be we're not, you know, it's not saying these people committed crimes. We're just, it's the kind of like other broad pardons that the presidents in the past have issued, like the Carter pardon to Vietnam era draft resistors, right, and then some small time marijuana smokers or something that I think Biden did. And there would be the idea would be that if you just name people by category, witnesses of the January 6th congressional investigation, or members of Congress involved in the Justice, or staff members, or people who worked in the Justice Department for the Office of the Special Counsel, you know, it wouldn't be as much of a, it would be harder to suggest that there was any wrongdoing involved. But that said, you know, I think the Republicans could play it. Trump will play it in quite a different way. And I don't think it really makes sense to pardon people who clearly have done nothing wrong. And so I personally think the solution really is to band people together to help these people fight back if they are in fact persecuted or even prosecuted. And I think, you know, I mean, and I guess it's not great solace to somebody who has to live through this, but I think relitigating some of this stuff and fighting on some of this stuff only will, you know, it will have, like what we were talking about at the very beginning of the podcast with Christopher Wray. It's like, we're showing, like, look at this bullshit. The criminal is the guy in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
All you're doing is you're prosecuting these people or investigating these people because that guy with the orange makeup and the screwy hair and the Coke button is a fucking criminal.
That's a legal term. It's from the Latin.
Yeah. Yeah. From Latin, ficium.
Ficium
imminulcre.
Yeah. Fucking fei imminulcre. Yeah. That's the original Latin.
Isn't this the kind of problem that can be solved with money?
Like, yes.
If you had a bunch of rich donors who could endow. I mean, look, Elon Musk spent $250 million on Trump's presidential campaign in like 12 weeks. You could find a bunch of people to spend
$50 million. You could put together
a legal defense fund that is big enough and strong enough that it can be used as a suit of armor against anything. Right? I mean, that's a thing that could happen.
Right. Yeah, I think it will happen and should happen. And but again, I fully concede that undergoing a bullshit investigation by the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, even if it's completely paid for, your costs are completely paid for and you're fully reimbursed. And even if you get a salary on the side,
right,
which probably would be illegal, but it would not be the way I would want to spend time if myself personally. And I can't blame anyone for feeling that way. But on the other hand, there are going to be a lot of people who are potentially pardonable under these, you know, under these proposals, such as Chislaney,
right,
who would say, you know, if you offered a pardon to her, I'm pretty sure she would say, fuck you.
Yeah.
And she would reject the pardon, which is actually the right of anybody receiving a federal pardon. They can choose to reject the pardon. They don't have to accept it for it to be valid, but they can reject it.
One of the asymmetries of the world we live in, George, is that it is the guilty people who are able to function perfectly normally, while being prosecuted for their crimes.
Right.
Because they're sociopaths and they're correct. Guilty.
Yes.
And somebody who's being unjustly persecuted would in fact lose a ton of sleep, and it would be debilitating towards.
Right. This because is the, they have shame and they're worried and maybe, you know, I mean, it's.
Is this, it, we talked
about it is a terrible lot in this world not to be a narcissistic sociopath, isn't it?
It's a huge disadvantage.
It really is.
It is a giant design flaw. Right. And I mean, I just think
if we could all take psychopath pills tomorrow, we would not have a care in the world.
It's like we, you know, we the would be, that Apple show, we would Severance, be, we would, right? We would You'd live, be able to leave your perfect, innie out and your outie out. Yeah,
absolutely. It's the perfect moment for all of us to be psychopaths. You know,
yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
Good. Well, that's, I mean, if I want the kids taking one lesson from this show today.
Right. Yep. How to be a psychopath. Yep.
George Conway, thank you for explaining all of it to me. Everybody, hit subscribe, follow the channel, be here next week for more. Sarah Longwell will be back then, and she's better than me, so you'll like the show better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm scared of her now after what she did to Kevin LeCard.
Good luck, America.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand, explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, Conway, tell them well about it. Those legal problems can't live without it. From the Ebola mess to the Russian ties. Oh, Sarah, listen close.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.